And good morning. Welcome to the CEO Story. And we have a fantastic show today. We have Mike Young, who is the co-CEO of Splash Entertainment and Kabillion. He has influenced hundreds of millions of people across the world with his entertainment stories. So, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure and fine.
Great. Can you just start us off by sharing a little bit about what Splash and Kabillion do, and then we can dig into your history and your CEO story?
Okay, yeah. So Splash Entertainment is an animation studio and distribution company, and we produce like a who's who of animated shows, from movies to television series, everything from, you know, from Clifford the Big Red Dog and Strawberry Shortcake and Care Bears and La La Loopsie. So they were like toy shows, Zuzu Pets, Norman the North, the feature film. All I Want for Christmas is You with Mariah Carey. We're doing two big movies with Lionsgate, Rock Dog at the moment, at the Rock Dog movies, and also a movie for Netflix, which is nearer your Yorkshire heart in that it's stars, two big soccer stars and Weird Al Yankovic. And basically it's a soccer-based football, and we'd call it, animated-based movie.
Fantastic. Mike is a fellow Brit, if you hadn't picked that up already. So, Mike, that sounds fantastic and amazing, the success you've had over numerous decades and the awards that you've won as well, which we'll touch into later on. But if we can rewind it and kind of start from scratch and kind of share your story through the ups and downs from the UK over to America and how it all began.
I hope you got 10 years of recording.
We'll take a condensed version, please.
Yeah. No, I started working for an American company called General Electric, and I qualified basically in dietetics, nothing to do with this industry whatsoever. And I always wanted to be a writer, and I wrote a few little, you know, screenplays and bits and pieces. And this job with General Electric was a fantastic job, and I had two cars and big expense accounts, and part of it was making some commercials for their food products, their food liquidizers and mixers. You know, this is back in the 70s when these were all new things in the UK. And basically, I wrote a story for the BBC, and it was a short story, and they used to get these famous actors to read them. And so Sir Anthony Hopkins read my story. Wow. And basically, I'm driving home down the freeway, motorway in from London to Cardiff, listening to him read my story, and it completely went to my head. And I quit my fabulous day job to become a full-time writer. The only thing worse you could do is quit your job to become a full-time actor.
Well, we know that all living in Los Angeles area, right?
So as part of all this, I had to do something to earn some money. So I started a company called Pedalcraft, and Pedalcraft used to train demonstrators who'd go into department stores and such and demonstrate products, like you see at, you know, Costco these days or whatever. Yeah. But this is, again, back something I'd invented, basically. And I had a little boy named Richard, who was like 2.5, and he was a bit afraid of the dark. So I used to tell him these stories about a teddy bear who was also afraid of the dark, but when he whispered his secret magic word, he turned into Super Ted. Not the most brilliant idea under the sun, but so one day I went to the play school, the kindergarten in the village, to collect him in a little Welsh village. Now, when you're a writer in Hollywood, you're one of thousands. When you're a writer in a Welsh village, you're the only one. Basically, so basically the school teacher said, "Oh, we love Super Ted stories." I said, "How do you know about those?" "Oh, we stand Richard on the desk and he always tells us the story you told him last night." And so she said, "You're a writer, why don't you get them published?" That's how accidental all this was. So I wrote a few books, went around all the publishers, got rejected lots of places. Eventually a publisher took them up and they became quite a big hit. And then we're in Wales in the UK, and they'd started the Welsh television network, Welsh language television network, S4C. And they came sniffing around saying, look, we'd like to do at least one show that carried our logo all over the world. And animation, of course, is great for that. So I talked myself into them letting me produce the show, even though I wasn't really an animator at all. I knew production, but that was about it. And we produced Super Ted, and we knew so little about it, we made it great. When you look at animation in the early 80s, it was very simple, stick figure, you know, He-Man, barely animated. Okay, whereas Super Ted was like Walt Disney. We copied how Walt Disney did stuff. And then, lo and behold, we became the first studio ever to sell a property to Walt Disney. Up until that time, Disney never bought an outside property, and they took Super Ted and they in America, and they marketed it in America, and completely went to my head then. We made a series with Hanna-Barbera of Super Ted as well, an American series, and another show called Fantastic Max with Hanna-Barbera. And then we did a movie with Hanna-Barbera called Once Upon a Forest. But I was finding that, you know, Hanna-Barbera had turned into a huge factory by this time. It wasn't like the creative hub that Joe and Bill had started right at the beginning. So wasn't enjoying the experience that much. So we decided to make the stupid decision to sell up everything, move to America. This is 31 years ago, and start a company competing against little entities like Disney and Warner Brothers and Paramount and all these.
That actually takes me into the next segue very well. So thank you for doing that. But how did you then go about with your new production company or animation company being able to compete and coexist in this space with some of these big companies like you just mentioned?
Well, first of all, what's interesting is that if you look at the massive hits in animation, there were things like the Smurfs and the Power Rangers and Pokemon. And now these days, you know, Peppa Pig and many others I could name. And they all came from independent studios. And the reason for that is that, you know, the freedom in an independent studio. You know, if you came up with an idea, I know you've got these four turtles and they live in the sewers and they come out of the sewers and they kick butt. And you were at Disney at that time, you would have had your butt kicked and kicked out because, you know, there would be too many executives, you know, but the Ninja Turtles became a massive thing because an independent company did it. So there's part of that, but also we were very lucky in that some people's bad luck is your good luck. Back in those days, in the early 90s, the studios weren't allowed to own the networks. There was a different, you know, a separation between like church and state, so to speak. And they changed that rule. It meant that the studios could then buy the network. So Disney bought ABC and Warner Brothers bought, you know, their network. They all, the big studios bought the networks. Now, it meant the big independent studios, like Film Roman and Classic Zippo and many other studios, really suffered very badly. Hanna-Barbera, Ruby Spears, because they relied on the networks ordering the shows from them and them owning the rights in those shows. It became a false circle in a moment. And so they would own the syndication rights after the network had had its year of showings, okay? And the network was, you know, largely funding the shows. So what happened was that they all started to collapse. Now, we had come in and we knew how to co-produce. Sorry, we work with BBC and we work with TF1 in France and ARD/ZDF in Germany. We knew everyone, whereas these big companies really at that time didn't know the international market that well. It's very interesting. You know, America, and you two, we're both foreigners here in some regard. You know, it can be the most insular country on earth in many ways. It's so big, it can be self-contained in many ways. And so back in those days, they really didn't explore. You know, they didn't need to because, you know, they owned the show, the network paid for the show, and et cetera. So we were, you know, co-producing, packaging out of the rest of the world.
There's two points there, Mike, that I really like that I want to just kind of re-emphasize a little bit. Was the first one is at the independent level, or the way you described it, it didn't stifle the creativity compared to the big studios. So that if there's people listening out here and they're in the creative world, to kind of not give up, to keep going and put yeah. all your ideas out there, because the good ideas will always rise to the top and find their way to a good home. And then secondly, on, you mentioned co-producing, being able to co-produce helped you pivot where a lot of other independents kind of shut down at that point. So it's knowing how the market is changing and being able to adapt to those conditions quickly.
Yeah. And it's spreading the risk. And don't forget, these days, you know, we're leaping forward 30 years, but basically Netflix and Disney Plus and all, they are very, very interested in the international market. In fact, really, nearly all their growth going forward will come from the international market. They're close to saturation levels in the USA. Therefore, if you look at Netflix, if you and I look at Netflix, you see dozens and dozens of British drama shows and French shows and Latin American shows, the Narcoses of this world, et cetera, et cetera. Now, those shows would never have been seen on American television. Peaky Blinders, can you imagine Peaky Blinders being on American television?
Yeah, it would never, and
it's a big hit.
Huge. Downton Abbey is one of the ones that travels really well internationally, right?
Downton Abbey again, has done very well over here. So, and by the way, that I think actually now is Netflix's main ace in the hole lead over all the other SVOD companies, is that it's got this very wide-ranging geographical reach. And don't forget, French parents don't want their kids playing in American and German kids, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's good that they know that they need to reach these families and not just be pure Americana, you know.
Absolutely. And that kind of leads us into the last point, or the next point, with the Kabillion channel that you have. Can you talk to us a little bit more about the essence of that and how that came about and became created?
Yeah, sure. We were working with, you know, Comcast on something, and they, this is now 11, 12 years ago, and they were just starting to convert their homes into digital homes. And at that time, they got up to 16 or 17 million digital homes. So it meant that digitally, they had this tremendous bandwidth. So we got talking to them, and we pitched them the idea of doing an AVOD channel, an ad-supported free channel. Now, in those days, we'd say AVOD to people, and they'd say, what the hell is that? You know, they didn't know what it was, even. And so we started with Comcast in 17 million TV homes. Then we spread to all the other cable networks, and also gradually all 26 million of the Comcast households were digitized. So it was growing and growing and growing. Then the OTT networks like Roku, and we're on Zumu, and we're on Walmart's channel. They got their own AVOD channel. And so gradually, between regular and then satellite, satellite was the slowest because AVOD needs, and SVOD needs huge bandwidth, whereas the satellite channels were too narrow a bandwidth at one time. Now they've more than caught up. So we're in probably 90 million TV homes through cable and satellite, and we're in another 30 or 40 million homes on OTT. Now, some of them cross over, so but conservatively, probably in the low hundreds, 105, 110 million. So a small company like ours, a relatively small company, now reaches this huge number of, we get, you know, 20 to 20, 25 million kids a month now at the moment. It's gone up and up and up because of what's happened with the coronavirus.
Crazy. And that kind of goes into the globalization and the move of everything over the internet and instant consumer demand for everything. And the fact that now that everyone has the internet and has these access, there's a lot less gatekeepers. You kind of touched on it in the past where when there was a segregation between studios and networks, there was a few gatekeepers that kind of patrolled that space and only what they liked got through.
Exactly.
Now, everyone's their own gatekeeper and you can pretty much access whoever you want, whenever you want.
And by the way, I was talking about domestic view. These are the domestic shows and domestic views. We've just launched last month in France. Sorry, some things are popping up here. In France, on Molotov, which is like in a third of the French television homes. And it was a soft launch only a few weeks ago, just testing it all out. And it's really been successful. And so next month in October, we're rolling out a lot more programs. So this company, Splash has 70, 75 staff. Kabillion has 5. Now, Kabillion, you know, our account department and other, you know.
Shared services.
But the fact is, to your point, 5 people run a network that probably conservatively 500 people would have been needed to run. Not so very long ago, and so basically, it's you know a massive reach, and you know companies are beginning to sniff around us now, and you know, and AVOD is growing actually faster than SVOD because you know, dare I say it, was especially with some of our them being our clients, but you know, how many SVOD channels will you have? You know, how many will you pay for? Will the average family pay for?
Yeah, there's only so many subscriptions that you would have. I think, you know, most people would have Netflix or the Disney one or Hulu or the major ones. And then it's just, I totally agree. But if we kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about creating really good content. So just going over your brief career, you've had some fantastic collaborations with the likes of Mariah Carey, the Schwarzenegger family, you've won various Emmys, BAFTAs, and the list goes on and on. But I think if we dig down a little bit, you've got to be creating good content to be recognized on a global level like that. So can you share some tips and tricks on what you classify or how you create good content or identify good content and then share that with the masters?
Yeah, by the way, let me start with something I mentioned to you the other day with a bit of dumb luck in that my cousin was an actor named Victor Spinetti. Poor old Victor passed away a few years ago, and he was in all the Beatles movies, Hard Day's Night, Help, Magical Mystery Tour. He was a great friend of the Beatles, and I spent a memorable evening out with the Beatles. And you'll get this one, John. I was overawed just being with them, and they were probably about 2 or 3 years older than me. Okay, but they might have been 40 years older than me. And so he said, John Lennon said to me, "Where are you from, then, Mike?" I said, "Cardiff in Wales." He said, "Oh, when we were poor, we used to tour down there, and we always used to stay at Mrs. Jones's house, and she has a dog with no legs, and I take it for a slide every morning." And that was John. So Victor, when Superted came along, he was tremendous help. He managed to help me find actors and voices that were iconic. You know, John Pertwee, you remember, he was Doctor Who, and Melvin Hayes, and Derek Griffiths, and Roy Kinnear, you know, and they were all really great actors at the time. And so you started with something like that, won a British Academy Award. It was bought by Disney. And so it really got your feet under the door in that regard. You know, people would take your meetings and take your phone calls, etc. But as you quite rightly said, it's really down to the content and the quality of the content. You know, when we first got here, we managed to make the little engine that could with Universal Studios, and we made it beautifully. And back in those days, VHS tapes and all the rest of it, it sold in zillions. So to this day, we work with Universal. Like Mariah Carey thing, we came up with the idea with her, All I Want for Christmas Is You, and we did it with Universal. And it was one of the top shows on Amazon. Every Christmas is on now, and it's always a massive hit.
So she stood the test of time, that one.
Yeah, we're currently doing two R.L. Stine book series that we've optioned. R.L. Stine is one of the top children's authors, tween authors in the world, you know, Goosebumps, etc. The one's called Little Shop of Monsters and the other's called Rotten School. We're working with Catherine Schwarzenegger on Maverick and Me, which is a book she's written. She's got a famous dad and famous husband, and she's famous herself. You know, she's number one bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list, and it's absolutely great working with her. And Catherine Jenkins, going back to homeland, Wales, Catherine Jenkins is not only drop-dead gorgeous, beautiful, she is the top-selling classical artist in the world. And she came up with this idea called Symphony Street, about a town that was split into rock and roll, jazz, classical, and country music. And by country, I mean international country music. And all the characters, the instruments of the orchestra, and she plays a young girl in it, which just starting out on it. And these days, even the number one channel in America for kids is reaching about a 40th of the audience at any given time.
Wow.
That's how split up the audience is. I won't mention names, I won't really, but it's the truth. Okay, and these days, you know, you've got to be in multi-portal places. You know, on Symphony Street, what we're going to do is 52 11s, minute episodes, 52 1-minute episodes, and a movie built into the 52 episodes, one 90-minute movie, and a mobile game. Now that way, you put the 1 minute on YouTube, you have the 11 minutes on TV, and the game out separately, and the movie you can sell through on Amazon.
Let me just kind of break that down a little bit then, at least to my level of understanding. So on each target platform, you're adjusting to the viewer of, or the ideal viewer on that platform. As an example, yeah. YouTube might have a 1 minute span, an app that the kids download might have 10 minutes per day play rate. And then a movie on the big screen would be 90 minutes or something along those lines, so that you're targeting the audience based on platform now, whereas before it wasn't done like that, right?
No, multiple platforms. So you aim to be on multiple platforms. The SVOD companies so far, they're going to do it, but they haven't driven a merchandising hit yet, a big, really big merchandising hit. They've tended still to come from those weekly showings. Our daughter is head of production at the VP of production at Disney Junior, and she produced a show called Muppet Babies. And our two youngest grandchildren were like 4 and 5 at the time. We said, look, Auntie Sarah's made this, it's Muppet Babies, let's watch it. So they watched the show and they loved it. They said, can we watch another one now? We said, well, actually the next one's on next Friday. And that was beyond their comprehension. They've grown up in the get it now era, you know what I mean?
I think Netflix has done a big job of kind of moving to that binge watching phase, whereas definitely my generation, it was one show a week on a Friday night, everyone's going to get around the TV and watch whatever that show is.
Yes.
And now it's literally everything's on demand on your mobile phone, and if the next one isn't there, your attention has just gone somewhere else.
Well, I think they're all trying to vary it a bit. You know, we had one series on Netflix that they put like 3 or 4 episodes, and then they were topping up with an episode every couple of weeks. And I think they go in that direction, because what was interesting with little Owen and Bodhi, the two little ones I just mentioned, was that on Wednesday they were saying, "Is it Friday yet?" They were anticipating that the show was going to come back.
Ah, so they remembered. Yeah. They actually remembered that show was going to come on Friday, and they were
That's right.
And there's a lot to be said about that in terms of anticipation and build up and kind of making people wait for it. Like, nobody likes to wait, especially the world today. But it does make a lot more loyal customer base if they are doing that.
Whereas you and I will watch Game of Thrones once, twice if you're a real nerd, okay? These little ones will watch the same thing over and over and over again. So preschool and what we call bridge shows, you know, the ones from 2 to 6 years of age, children love repetition. It's one of the ways they learn. So therefore, they will watch the same show over and over and over again. So preschool shows punch well above their weight in views on Netflix and Disney.
That's actually a really good point, because when you get onto platforms on the monetary side and the back end like YouTube, which pays per view, then that makes it more worth your while to produce something in that category versus, like you said, Game of Thrones, where adults are only watching that once, maybe twice, whereas kids are just on repeat. And my nephews and nieces are the same with Ryan's Toys or whichever the young, like you said, Peppa Pig and things like that, where they would just play to death to the point at which it's driving the adults crazy.
That's right. And, you know, and Peppa Pig in, and by the way, and these were tended to be once a week shows, you know, things like PJ Masks and Paw Patrol and Peppa Pig. And so they started as once a week shows, and therefore it built, it's like Friends, let's go to a different age group category. It was years and years and years of productions, you know, series after series after Building, or Mad Men, any of these shows. And so it's interesting, will the SVOD companies order more than 3 seasons of shows? They tend not to, put it that way.
And that then puts the onus back on the creative to keep producing something new and relevant that will catch the end user's attention time and time again.
That's right. It's with children all the way up the age range, you know, till they tweens, you know, EI content, we call it education instruction content. We did a show called Jake's The Adventures of Piggly Winks, which won 6 Emmys or 7 Emmys and a British Academy Award. We did it here, and it was this Irish little farmyard characters in CGI. And but it had tremendous EI content. Clifford the Big Red Dog did. Education instruction. They don't know they're learning, but they are. There's a show we have on Netflix and on Kabillion. It's called Oh Yuck. In fact, one of the bylines of it is the kids have to give their parents permission to watch the show, because it's so yucky, you know. But it's full of EI content beyond the yucky stuff, which is based on a multi-million selling book called Oh Yuck, the Encyclopedia of Everything Nasty. And this show is, you know, you deal watch it for a few minutes. If you're not nauseated by it, you start to get to the science.
Fantastic. I like the whole subconsciously learning element, especially for young kids. It's very important. Where over the next 5 years or then the next short to midterm, do you see the TV space moving? Is it going to move into VR or AI or anything like that? Or is it very much going to be on phones and TVs still? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I thought by now we'd be seeing the Lakers playing on a carpet in your living room, running up and down, you know, on a court that was marked out, you know. but yeah, it hasn't happened, you know, so far. And, you know, I wish I had the answers. It's very strange that the 3D look came and went. It became a bit of a hit 5-6 years ago, and everybody thought that everything was going to be 3D, but for some reason it didn't really catch on, more in Asia than it did here. Well, it's interesting, you know, you've got the very big companies like Netflix and Disney and Peacock. Peacock have been very smart because they've taken the English Soccer League.
From NBC recently, right? And
And I said this to someone the other day, is that American sports especially need AVOD more than SVOD because they have a lot of commercial gaps in it. Cricket
commercials and the American things, like if you watch NBA or NFL, there's way too many commercials and they split up the floor.
Our sports, like cricket and soccer and rugby, they're continuous.
Yeah.
Okay. But the American sports need AVOD because there are natural commercial breaks all the time. So I think you'll see, if the AVOD companies can afford it, you'll see more and more big sports, you know, move in that direction.
As an example of that, would AVOD be, let's just say the ball went out to play in a soccer game. The 5 seconds it takes for the guy throwing the ball back in to get the ball from the crowd to be a quick snap advert. Is that what you...
Yeah, no. I think they wouldn't do that. In the golf yesterday, I noticed that they were running commercials while the play was going on. Okay, you'll see a bit more of that, I think, really. But it was more the American sports. American sports, there are plenty of gaps in play. So, you know, AVOD will benefit tremendously. So I think you will see what's great for anyone listening to this is that there are now more opportunities than ever in terms of creativity. If a guy from Wales can you know, make his way over here and make a reasonable success or something, then anyone can, put it that way. There's the kids in schools and colleges. The best advice I can give them is, get in somewhere. Whatever you do, in the old days, you used to lick stamps. Whatever it takes, get in somewhere as an intern. One of the interns who we had on He-Man 20 years ago is now head of all development at DreamWorks. You know, so basically, it's best once you're inside, you start to make friends and get contacts and all the rest of it. So that's the first thing. Then the second trick is, once you're inside and once you've learned something, then do something for yourself, something you own. Disney is this massive copyright owning company. It owns tons of copyrights, and that's the real wealth. The real wealth of our company is owning or partially owning.
Building your own library.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Great, Mike. So let me end with the question that I ask everybody on the podcast is, if you had to attribute your success between three factors, how would you split that over drive, skill, and luck?
Yeah. Well, luck, absolutely, no matter what anyone tells you, comes into it tremendously. You know, you can see some of these big companies and they go years and years without a hit. You know, SpongeBob comes along once in a blue moon, okay, with all their money and all their talent and all their people. You need a bit of luck, okay? Drive, you know, I think anyone who knows me knows that I've got the gift of the gab and I do have drive, and
we can't tell, Mike. We can't tell.
Yeah. You've got to be able to tell a story. it was a writer with his wife. His wife's a great producer, and the writer is a great writer, and he can't pitch to save his life. Okay, and she knows that, and so she sort of does it for him. And so you do actually have to be able to tell a story, and those are luck, drive, and the ability to sell. No matter what industry you're in, you've got to be able to sell.
Definitely great. So, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us. I love the stories, and I've heard even more of the ones that you mentioned, and look forward to hearing more again. But if anyone would like to get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
It's mike.young@splashentertainment.com. splashentertainment.com. And and I always get back to people. I'm not like some of the people who never reply to anything.
Fantastic. And we'll put the links below to Splash Entertainment and to Kabillion so people can check out the website. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and bye for now.